outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson, and I want to welcome you to this last edition of The God Journey for 2019.
You scared me right there.
That's what I'm wanting to do. I want to scare everybody, but you look scared, so it freaked me. But we're going to go on hiatus here for the last couple weeks, Christmas, New Year's, all that good stuff. So this is the last one we're going to get done this year. And joining me today is Kyle Rice, president, founder, whatever, of Blue Sheet Media.
But co-founder,
we started doing podcasts long before that was true. It's just my good friend. I've enjoyed this year. In fact, we've got to add a lot of other voices to the podcast this year, from Kyle to Julie to Tracy to Bob and Arnita, and kind of change the nature of the podcast that we're doing. And that is just finding the conversations I think are going to be most helpful and to explore some things. And the person I think maybe is best positioned to help us explore that. So sometimes for young people and things like that, we jump Kyle on here. And for children's stuff, we jump Julie. And marriage stuff, we'd get Sarah, but Sarah's given up. So I can't get her to podcast anymore. I tried. Anyway, Kyle, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing?
It's great to be back. However, I'm slightly concerned.
You're concerned?
Yeah, I'm concerned
for
about
my friends in Kenya. Tell me it's for my friends in Kenya.
Unfortunately, it's not. Oh, it's my fear that you may have hacked my Amazon account. My wife and I were on our Amazon order registry, and we found a onesie for our up-and-coming daughter that was Green Bay Packers.
Oh, yeah. No, that wouldn't be me.
We have no idea how it got in there. We have no idea who put that in there. But somehow a onesie for the Green Bay Packers showed up in our Amazon account. So I was very suspicious.
It's not my size, right?
It is not your size. Yeah, no, it would definitely not fit you.
No, I wouldn't get a onesie for myself, first of all. Two, I have no idea how to even get into your account. So I'm kind of... But obviously someone in your life loves you very much.
I guess there is somebody that is trying to... taint our future daughter's decision on what her professional football team is going to be, or at least push it in one direction.
Believe me, I've got pictures of my son in Green Bay Packer gear when he was younger, and when he got older, he went Niners. So none of that even matters. But
good to know.
So, are you saying I'm the only friend you have as a Green Bay Packer guy?
To my knowledge, yes.
Well, to your knowledge. Obviously, your knowledge is lacking just a little bit.
I was going to say, there's somebody in my community that has access to my Amazon account that is a Packers fan that I was not aware of.
Well, yeah, obviously. And you're willing to take that lack of information and make assumptions.
Possibly. I just had to look at the person that I knew was, you know, had some buy-in, had some stake in promoting the Green Bay Packer name.
I actually got called up on that myself last week. Someone in our neighborhood hosted a Christmas party for everybody to get together. And
okay.
I guess it spawned off the fires last year. And I was out of town last year when they did it. But this year they have this Christmas gathering. Just let the neighbors get to know each other. And I'm sitting there talking to a neighbor that I don't know. I met for the first time last night. But we walk through this neighborhood all the time with our dogs. So we're pretty aware of a lot of things going on in the neighborhood. And we're by this home one day when the police were out front, and they're taking a guy seemingly into custody, and it was the rumors in the neighborhood, you know, were somebody, spousal abuse, whatever. And so every time you walk by that home, I'm just thinking, oh my gosh, it's so bad for the people that live there. And then I noticed the couple's back together again, quote unquote, if they ever were apart. So you make all these assumptions. I sit and talk with a couple. Delightful couple, whatever it was that went on at their home, it wasn't that. And I didn't bring it up. I'm going, yeah, but the cops were there about, you know, a year ago or whatever. I didn't bring up anything, but go, you know, assumptions are just dangerous stuff. You know, you have.
Yes, they are.
You have enough information that you feel like you can jump to the appropriate conclusion. And then it turns out, oh my gosh, I kind of, every time I walk by that house, kind of thought ill things of them and then found out, man, that's not even going on there. So. Grateful for that, and grateful to be reminded that assumptions pretty much suck.
That they do.
And I'm reminded of that freshly now. I wouldn't even know how to order a Green Bay Packer onesie on Amazon.
Well, if that does happen to get delivered to our home, I will make sure to take a photo for you of our daughter in it and send it to you so that you have that.
Great. How's that pregnancy going?
It's going well.
You guys are coming up on the end of it here. Pretty cool. In fact, by the time this airs, you will probably have your child.
That is very true. By the time this podcast airs, there's a very good chance that I will be a father of a newborn.
Well, you're a father
daughter.
Now.
Correct. Sure. Yeah. Exactly right.
So that's cool. And Jess is doing well. She had a little bit of an infection scare, but she's better.
She did, yes. She's much better. Edema's down. And we are actually going on Thursday for our final ultrasound. And then we're going to be touring the hospital that she's going to be giving birth in. And we've been talking about all the different little details going into the actual birthing process. So that's been an interesting journey.
And you get to be the coach.
I get to be the coach. Oh, so my brother reminded me to take off because I wear a ring on each one of my hands, a family ring and then my wedding ring. And my brother reminded me to take those rings off so that when my wife is gripping my hand with a death grip, that she doesn't break my fingers with my rings.
He had that problem, did he?
He may have encountered that himself.
Yes. Wow. I didn't encounter that, but boy, I tell you what, the whole miracle of birth and how amazingly whatever it is, romantic, it wasn't that for me. I was just like, oh my gosh, I would like to have been born in the days when we sit out and watch TV and wait for the nurse to come in and tell us that we have a new child.
Yeah, what happened to that? What happened to this thing that required us to go into the birthing room and be there with a breathing coach? I'm with you. I like the good old days where I could be sitting out in the lobby watching some good action flick and then they bring my daughter out to me.
I at least remember the good old days. I doubt you do.
I've heard rumors of them. That's all. Yeah. I've just heard rumors.
Oh my gosh. I was right on the leading edge of the guy gets to go in. Isn't that great? And I'm going, oh boy. And the second one we had, Sarah almost gave birth in the parking lot.
Oh.
Because she wouldn't go into the hospital until my parents showed up to take our first child with them. And this was like 5 in the morning. We'd called them, got them out of bed. They're 30 minutes away. Come get the baby. So we go to the hospital. Taking them 30 minutes to get there. And Sarah is about, in fact, she gave birth within about 20 minutes of actually going into the hospital. I mean, she was
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. And there were guys from the emergency room out there begging her, you've got to go. And she said, I'm not going because he won't go with me if I don't go. I'm like, what? I was there last time. What do you mean I won't go? Of course I'll go. But she wasn't buying it. She wasn't leaving my side. So we barely got in there before little Andy popped out. So there we go.
That would have been an experience.
Well, we're praying for you and Jess and wish you all the best as you get through the last 2 weeks of this thing. And since this is the last podcast of the year, happy Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to everybody listening. And hopefully we'll come back in 2020. Wow, it's hard to believe that, huh?
Yes, it is.
He loves me. He'll be 20 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's a whole new year for God to do whatever it is that God wants to do. So my heart's kind of heavy today, though. I mean, I'm right in the cusp. I know we're recording this a bit early, but I'm right in the middle of hearing about all the Kenya stuff and all the work we've done among a group. Not all of it, but a lot of the work we've done has just been washed out in these torrential floods. And the wells will be okay, as far as we know, some of the agricultural work. But, I mean, whole villages, huts, everything swept away. Their storehouse for the crops they grew got washed away. No food, no housing, no bedding. And so we're trying to raise about $45,000, and we'll have to have raised it by now by the time people hear this. But we will be coming back in the future because there's a lot of rehabbing some of the agricultural stuff that's going to be significant again money-wise. So my heart's kind of heavy for them. It's hard to enjoy the bounty that we enjoy when you know people are dying on the other side. 65 people have already killed, and probably more with disease and other things that follow this kind of flooding. So if you got some time, pray about it. If you've got some cash you want to help send our way by the end of the year, because some of you like those end of the year tax deductions, believe me, there's not an amount you can give me that we can't use in Kenya. So yeah, anyway. Whoa, that was that. Somebody throwing dishes at you.
My foster son exiting the building.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah, I forgot. You got a foster son to boot. So you guys
Absolutely.
Are busy. That good?
We are.
Okay.
It has been. Yes, it has been. In fact, today I mentioned that earlier to you that it's been kind of a day of highs and lows. And today we actually had the court date for our foster son to determine whether or not he was going to be staying with us long term.
Or get pulled out.
And forced back into the home.
Yeah, yep. Which he wasn't wanting to do.
Correct.
How'd it come out? Is it They're still pending a decision, or
it was a major godsend, honestly. Jess and I, we spent some time praying over the, because it wasn't supposed to be for another 10 days to 2 weeks. And then we got a call this morning from his parole officer notifying us that it was this afternoon at 1 o'clock.
They can do that just last minute.
They can do that. But man, it was so we went in not knowing what to expect, especially from the last multidisciplinary team meeting that we had had, where it was pretty turbulent and weren't sure if he was going to be able to remain with us long term. Was able to go up and before the actual court hearing, got to meet with both of the lawyers and the parole officer and just have a conversation with them, and come to find out all of our hearts were actually unified with a similar desire for this young man. And so that was encouraging before we even went into the courtroom, to hear that there had been some misunderstanding, and then one of the county attorney had been wanting to kind of get a feel for where this young man was at, whether he was just being obstinate or if there was actually some legitimacy to why he didn't want to go home.
Okay.
And so today went in and was able to actually share with the judge how he's been doing in our home, and he's been doing very, very well. And to share, some of the things that I had seen, both from a therapeutic background and as a new dad for a teenager. He shows signs of trauma, and I wanted to be very careful not to accuse his parents of any kind of abuse or that kind of thing, but just say, hey, I don't know what took place either in the home or outside of the home, but there are signs of trauma in this young man's life. And I just want to reiterate what those signs of trauma have been, and then how he's been moving through those since he's been placed in our home. Cool. And the parents in the courtroom took it as I was calling them a criminal and that I was accusing them of horrific child abuse, and this whole thing went on in the courtroom, and it was this really incredible experience where the judge paused the whole conversation and said, look, that wasn't what was shared at all. But he's like, sometimes our perceptions and the way that we interpret things through the lens of our pain, the lens of our life experience, the lens of the way of the things that are going on in our hearts, the stressors that are going on in our worlds, those can dictate and shape the way that we view things. And he's like, what I've heard from the county attorneys, what I've heard from his counselor, what I've heard from his foster parents is that does have some background in some type of pain, some type of traumatic experience in his life. And that may have been a way that he just interpreted it. And that's the way that he experienced it. And that has caused him to have these wounds. And it was like God stepped foot in that courtroom and divinely intervened in that situation.
That's great.
And it was incredible. At one point I had to like squeeze my wife's hand and say, breathe, because she was so angry and so frustrated with some of the things that were being said in the courtroom. And yet God stepped in, and it was really cool to get to see. So that was one major victory today that was a huge relief for both Jess and I.
That's great. That's like the world, isn't it? Disaster on one side of it, great victory in a courtroom on another side of it. And it's just the way life works, highs and lows, yeah. Ups and downs. But man, and you guys, man, good on you for getting your feet wet in parenting by starting with a teenager. Most of us kind of start with a little puppy kind of kid and work their way up and kind of put all the trauma in them ourselves instead of taking on someone else's trauma. So
I've been actually loving, I loved the last podcast that you guys did with Julie and with Arnita. I was actually taking notes because some of the things directly applied to some of the stuff that we're facing with our foster son. Great. But man, I'm actually much more comfortable dealing with taking on a teenager and parenting a teenager than I am a little baby. That has me so intimidated and so nervous.
I can't wait till we talk to you in the aftermath of that, because that'll be fun.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that.
You're raising a little one. Hey, I don't know what you want to talk about today. One of the reasons I wanted to have you on, I got this email kind of addressed to both of us, and I sent you a copy of it a few weeks ago, but it just said, it's from Brian. He said, my heart has recently been reawakened to serve this younger generation. I was a high school teacher for 15 plus years. I've been out of it for 6 now. I'd love for you and Kyle to bring some young people into the conversation and hear what they think about the Bible its relevance and what they see in us that woos them to the Father, and what about us makes them think that our faith is irrelevant in their life. Man, I read that going, man, I'm not sure how we'll do that. I'm not sure how we bring people into this podcast to have that conversation, but I know you have it with kids quite frequently. I have it some when I'm on the road, but let me just finish what he writes, because this is what really tapped my heart. The next paragraph, he said, it would seem that they do not see the adventure, trust of Jesus rather than secular idols, and life worthy of the kingdom in us being the larger scale, older generation, because we have spent too much time healing from the destruction of our own unbelief. Again, a topic you and Kyle touched on. Barner Group just did some research on the matter that we confirm. My prayer is that there are more 40-somethings like me who have a similar passion, who will rise up, buck the Western wealth, comfort, and security model, and risk it all for those coming behind us. And I hope so too. I have enjoyed more and more as I've traveled, particularly over the last year, being with much younger people, people late teens, early 20s, sometimes kids of the people whose home I'm staying in. And I find what he says to often be true. And it's been true of the generation just ahead of that, maybe kids in their 30s now or early 40s. Somehow they didn't catch the adventure of a life in Jesus. Even the kids raised in kind of church settings, they caught the obligation maybe, and some of them reacted to that and left. They caught the, you got to believe what's right or you're going to burn forever message, but some didn't believe it. And I think we're in that crux of a changing reality of how is it that we demonstrate the life of Jesus to kids in a way that makes it engaging, not got to do, not, okay, this is a bad part of life. You better, you know, before you die, get things right with God. But really find God so engaging. What are you finding in that, Kyle? The people you talk to, the kids you live with?
Well, I deeply resonate with what he sent and just the words that he penned. I'm finding a bit of a combination of both. A lot of the young people especially that grew up in the church, an organized church institution, I'll just put it that way, there isn't a lot of understanding about the adventure of God. I would agree with the fact that often they're very good at the rule following. They're very good at understanding, you know, this is the moral code that I'm supposed to adhere to. A lot of the students that I work with in a public school system, they either come from families where their parents are very active in the church, but they want nothing to do with it, or they come from families that have nothing to do with any kind of faith-based system. But it's really interesting because I was actually just having this conversation with a few of my volleyball athletes along this topic. And one of them asked me, Kyle, how have you had such an interesting life? Because I share with them about some of the different things that I've done and the adventures that I've had and the places in the world that I've seen. And their feedback is constantly like, you're from here. Like, how did you ever experience this? How did you even go there? And that's been a lot of my feedback is like, look, guys, I got invited into a journey of faith with Christ that I would have never expected. And when I began to accept the daily invitations of just adventuring with him, it took me to places that I never even began to imagine that I would ever see, people that I never thought I'd ever know. And to them, that's just such a foreign concept. Because the people that they see that, quote unquote, are living out their faith, they don't have adventure in their life. Often they don't have joy in their life. They're very very straight and narrow in their perspective, and they're not living a life that would be attractive to young people. And yet there's a longing in young people to know something bigger than themselves.
Yeah, if we believe in the hunger of the human spirit, that God has created us for himself, and that we're restless until we find our rest in him, then there's not a person we meet that, even if they're off in the ways of the world, or even if they're lost in religion, that there isn't something in their heart that hungers for something different. There's something that meets that. And I find when you connect with that, and it can be an older person's life, but particularly with a younger person, when you connect with that sense, and I loved his question here, what is it that they see in us that woos them to the Father? What do we think that is? And what is it that makes them think that our faith is irrelevant, that it's not worth pursuing, or it's not engaging enough, that they'd rather get lost in sports or video games or whatever, all that seems more engaging. It's nothing wrong with having entertainments in our life, but that that would be more engaging than simply waking up every morning and discovering what adventure does God have for me today in who I meet, where I go, what doors he might open. I mean, that's where I find the adventure of this journey.
Yeah.
And the other side of it's just, you know, getting up and getting through the day and getting your job in and getting your dinner fed and getting your entertainment on. That's just not enough for me. If this was not an adventure of God actually unfolding himself as much in the, I tried something I thought was God, it didn't turn out to be, as I did try some things that turned out to be. I mean, it's both of that, right? I mean, adventure is not, it always goes well. It can go poorly some days. What is it, do you think, that we're doing, that people do, older Christians, that make kids think faith is irrelevant?
One of the big feedbacks that I hear from young people is people quoting biblical passages to them that A, they don't think is relevant to their life, and B, unfortunately, the person who's quoting them often has completely missed the heart of the passage to begin with. And so having cliche, quote-unquote, biblical phrases thrown at them, that is a major turnoff.
Particularly when they're rules, right? I mean, that's about the only time people pulls out the quote. Here's a rule you got to follow. Without knowing the God I know, you've got to follow this rule of his, which you said is often misinterpreted. That's often true. It is. But the other side of that, even if you interpret it right, and this is a way God wants us to live, we can't live that way without knowing him. And a lot of what God would ask us to live in doesn't make sense if the natural mind is all we have to try and get our head around it. Then it seems like, well, okay, it's just a bunch of stupid ways we're supposed to live. And it treats people mean who don't do it the way Christians do it. And it's all that kind of talk instead of the real adventure is, first of all, come and get to know the God I know. Don't worry about following all the rules. Don't worry about, you know, what you think he should want you to do, or even what sin and evil is. Until you have a God worth loving, you're not going to understand why God says that is sin and this is good for you. You won't understand it. It's going to be like an arbitrary set of rules that's offensive. And that's why the invitation is, man, there's a God for you to know. You have a father who loves you more than anyone on this planet ever has or ever will. You do. And then I find people kind of light up with that. Well, if that's true, I'd want to know that. And I think that's what most people would. But they're not convinced it's true. It's like God is the Santa Claus character the parents still believe in, so they're going to do between naughty and nice, but he really doesn't show up. He really doesn't make a difference in your life, so you're really left to your own anyway, and it's just a device people use to make people live the way they want to. I think that's how a lot of the kids I know who've kind of rejected the faith of their parents have kind of, either God's irrelevant because God never shows up, or I'm not following these stupid rules because my parents do, and it doesn't do them any good.
And I think you just nailed one of the big things. The other big things that I think turn young people off to Christianity and walking with Christ is they are very keen observers of people's lives and the way that they live them. And hypocrisy is the biggest turnoff to them. But on the flip side, people who authentically live love and live transparency and live vulnerability, that is insanely attractive to young people.
Yeah.
I mean, just that goes right by the guards, right by all the boundaries, and because they see that you genuinely mean it. There's that humility of, no, I'm not perfect, but this is the life that I'm living, and this is who makes me, and both the good and the bad. And when you live that genuinely in front of them, that is a catalyst for them to ask questions.
And don't we all hate hypocrisy? I mean, I'm in that camp. And Jesus, he really hated it. He said that's the one thing that just destroys what God wants to do in the world. He talked about the leaven of the Pharisees is they pretend to be on the outside what they are not on the inside. So they got this external righteousness, but it comes with an arrogance and a superiority. And a sense that on the one hand, they're these righteous people. On the other hand, they're plotting to murder Jesus because he loves too much for them. And that's Jesus hated it. And he warned us as Christians, that's the thing that will kill you. The leaven of the Pharisees will kill the life of this kingdom.
Yeah.
Because you got to be authentic to the core, and you've got to be honest about where it works and be honest about where it doesn't seem to work. And your questions and struggles become just as important as trying to get the truth to people, particularly when it's a truth you're not living yet. You're not settled in because God hasn't won it in your heart yet. So you're trying to walk out of Christianity that's a series of regulations and doctrines instead of the really knowing of a person that transforms me from the inside out.
So how do you think it got to the place where the normal code for the way to behave at a Sunday morning gathering was to put on a happy face, to step into the church doors and everything is good, that life is great, and that if you were to walk into the church doors and say, and somebody say, "Hey, great, how's your day going today?" And your response was, "Actually, it's been an awful day and I really don't want to be here." How do we get to where that would be an unacceptable answer?
Because if you say that, someone's going to try and fix you. And I think people have learned, gee whiz, last thing I need is someone telling me, well, if you just trust Jesus more, I think that's part of it. I think part of it, I know when I grew up, it was always, you know, you were farmers. And so all week long, you're in work clothes doing work stuff. And then Sunday morning, you put on the fancy clothes and the little girls wear dresses and the boys put on, you know, a tie and a shirt that they never wear anywhere else in life. And you get the idea that this is a conformity place and we like happy people here and we're selling success in Jesus and it's a wonderful plan for your life. And it's all part of the mystique. And there's a part of that that's true, but only when it's authentic. And you don't you wouldn't want people coming to church maybe in your dirty old work clothes with your hair uncombed and all that. So just kind of, this is the one social event of the week. And I think that was part of it. I think it's dangerous in many religious settings to let your guard down because you'll become the subject of gossip. And if somebody, because they're conformity based settings, if you're not conforming to the ethics of the group so that you struggle or you have doubt, people are going to climb on you at some point, particularly if you don't. You're not rawing what's going on elsewhere in the church. And then, well, of course not. Look at them. They're people who are struggling with faith still. They're not even sure they believe in Jesus. And I think conformity-based settings are all about rewarding those who look like they've got it all together and diminishing honesty, authenticity. And I think that's what religious settings have really been a turnoff to me and to a lot of other people. I was reading something in John this week where it talked about Jesus exposing the evil in man's pretensions. That was a language Eugene Peterson used in The Message. And I tell you, it really hit me because that's where I get attacked all the time. When you talk honestly about religious environments and people, oh, you're just unloving or whatever. And I think Jesus, when you expose the pretensions, what I think you have to do, if you're going to really engage people on this journey, particularly young people who are contemplating it, if you just invite them into the pretension, they're not interested.
No,
I'm not interested. When I get around religious people who are all about pretense and you just sense there's not a level of all, we're not talking about real things here and real struggle because I know what life is like. I live a pretty good life in Jesus, but it's not always, you know, as Brad would say, rainbows and puppy dogs, man. There's days when it's just painful and there's days when you kind of lose sight of what God might be doing in situation A or B. And if you're not honest about that and opening the door, but where does that door open? Sunday morning is about our performance. It's about keeping things that look good on a stage for most of the people here. For someone to stand up and say, man, a really crappy week, I'm not even sure God lives anymore, dwells, it would just freak people out. They have no idea what to do with that. Listen, we're all pretending that it all works well here. Please do not interrupt that illusion. Jesus kept poking holes in that illusion all the time. And I think he poked holes in it because he really cared about people who were being turned off by it. He was less worried about those who wanted to play the game than he was those who didn't want to play the game, but he still wanted them to know his Father.
Yeah.
And I know that's what turned me off to it. It's why when I go now and then to places, I sit there for a while and I go, oh my gosh, this wears me out. I'd rather sit in my home with 10, 12, 2, 4, 6, 8 people who are just really being honest and real and struggling in their faith or whether God's even real or not, then I would just, we had the pageant and we went home to our real lives away from what we pretend is so good.
At least out where I'm currently living, there's a lot of expectation that if you're going to be a part of, if you're going to identify as a Christian, that one of the primary expectations is that you are going to a local church. you're at a local church building, and which local church building do you go to? And, you know, and yet, like, the young people that I talk to on a regular basis, they have little to no interest whatsoever of stepping foot in the doors of a lot of those institutions. What is really intriguing to me, though, is that a lot of them, they would never go to the step into the church doors. They'll go to something like Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And man, just the access point that's there, where it's a bunch of their peers, they're having real life conversation about things, and it's not smaller, usually smaller groups of people. That's one avenue that I've seen God using in this area, you know, and I think a lot of it is people who are just being very intentional to live out their lives authentically around young people.
I've got a friend here who's he's a Hispanic guy from Mexico, living here in Thousand Oaks, become a good friend of mine. And he's a Golden Glove boxer from back in the day. He was a sparring partner for Oscar De La Hoya, and he's done some stuff like that. And some kids found out about it, just friends of his kids, his own children, who are high school age, one of them. And so the kids were, hey, could you train us for that? You know, we'd like to do some boxing stuff. So he started training a couple of kids. That now has become 50 kids in two different communities. Mm. And these are gangbanging kids. Some of these kids have been killed, murdered in a gang thing. One was stabbed in the heart. Lived through it, almost died, lived through it. And Luis has become a close friend of all these kids. And when they're in trouble, they call him. When the kid gets stabbed in the hospital, the kid's parents wouldn't let Luis see him because they were keeping it just to family and they weren't letting Luis get in there. The kid was in a coma, but he told Luis after he got out of the coma, I could see you by my door and I wanted to scream, come in here and hold me. Let me know I'm loved. Come touch me. And they were keeping you out. And he was just kind of awoke to this. It's been amazing. It's like those are just really turned on by the Gregory Boyle story of the reaching out to the gang kids in LA. That's part of a fabulous that Tattoos on the Heart is a book that talks about it. I look at Luis's life and say, this is what that was in the early days. This is just a guy whose life has become a magnet. He's got 80 kids who are estranged from their parents, estranged from the law. And his requirement is, I'll teach you to box. I'll do it for free. But to come here, your homework has to be caught up. That's his only rule. You don't have to know Jesus. And they all want to, and he also leads a youth group, but none of those kids go to that youth group. They don't want to go to the church at all. But they come, he has two nights a week where he just meets with kids, teaches them boxing. And then his phone is filled with phone calls and texts and messages all week long. And I remember one guy in Canada telling me, if you want to touch kids, all you have to do is show them that you care.
Yeah.
And if you care, absolutely, then they're going to care. And I love what Brian wrote about being a 40-plus guy wanting to touch younger kids. And I tell you what, I have the same desire in my heart. And not just touching kids that are totally estranged from Jesus. I also want to be involved with mentoring young people who want to have a different way to minister the life of Jesus in the world than just going the whole pastorpreneur route or some other thing. I mean, I like spending time with those guys too, saying there's a different way to look at all this. You don't have to follow the business model of starting a church so I get enough income to do whatever. There's a way to live in the world and do what God's asked you to do and watch how God resources it for you. But I was just in touch this week with an old friend, probably have him on the podcast in the new year, but he was talking about a study he was part of called Belong. And he said in their study, they found out over one third of young people aged 13 to 25 report having one or fewer adults that they could turn to if they had a problem or needed to talk. And that, and that included parents.
Wow.
And what they found is these kids were really hungry to have some authentic people in there, not people who run a youth group for them. People who are just, you know, go out and have a drink, have a milkshake and talk and get buy a hamburger and talk about their life and let them ask questions. Some of them have never been mentored in some of the basic budgetary, just survival skills of life. And I think this is a great opportunity for people to say, man, I want to get involved with some kids. And now he's having the limits. I can't do more than this. But when people drop out, or in this case, as some of them end up in juvie because they're boarding on the gang thing, and some of them are acting out of their pain and doing things that are very destructive. Again, showing people you care and that you're going to be there for them. People find that engaging. They'll be there.
And I think that's a huge piece that you touched on is not having an agenda. Just showing that you genuinely care for them and that whatever they decide to do, that you're going to be consistent in their life and that you're going to care for them. And I mean, the amount of kids that have actual access to that, I'm not surprised by that statistic. It breaks my heart, but I'm not surprised by it.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Especially with what I see in the school districts that I work in and the kids and the young youth that I mentor, it doesn't surprise me in the least.
Especially some of the older people I'm with who talk about millennials or teenagers with the disdain. Those people are not coming to get your help, right?
No.
Yeah. And if we could just find, and I would say to Brian or people, I say, man, I would really love to have some young kids to mentor in my life. Ask God how. Don't try to copy, you know, Lewis's boxing thing or, you know, going down to the gang projects in LA or, you know, starting a ministry where you're going to evangelize, because there's the agenda right there.
Yep.
If you just love, if you just look for a way to help, there'll be people come into your life and God can show you how. And there's a million ways I'm sure it can happen. But having the passion is good. Holding it before God is good. Letting your life ooze into that freedom to live authentically and in front of other people. Learning all those things will open this kind of door. And I think Brian is also wanting to say, and I would say too, to young people, hey, if you're one of these, go find an older person. Ask if they'll help you. There's a lot that will. Find the person whose life you would like to emulate. And go, hey, could we get together now and then? I have some questions about life I'd love to bounce off you. And this could, you can put this on young people too. If you want somebody like that, go looking for someone. And when you get that whiff of religious pretension, run, find somebody else.
Yeah.
Don't go down that road. When you're turned off to it, trust the Holy Spirit in you is turning you off for a reason. And look for someone that's engaging, gracious, helpful, honest, open.
A lot of my young people would respond, I couldn't even think of, you know, they voiced that. Like, I couldn't even think of somebody like that. I don't know somebody like that other than you, which is why I'm sitting here in your office right now, you know.
And that's good enough.
And it is. And especially for Brian, I would encourage him, chances are the avenue for him to be able to have access to young people's lives is already currently in his life. It's probably already there,
right,
whether he knows it or not. God's built in either a passion or a skill set or even a conversation or a relationship with somebody that is a door just waiting to be opened up. And so, yeah, just holding that, like you said, holding that in front of God and being on the lookout for it. I think that's part of it, is recognizing and identifying that passion, but then being on the lookout for where is God giving me access to young people right now? Where can I serve them? Where do I have access to them in a way that doesn't have an agenda, that's just real life engagement?
And that goes back to the adventure, right? So God, I'm waking up today. Where do I see your fingerprints today? And where can I open my life to that? And if I don't see him today, I'm looking tomorrow. If I don't see him tomorrow, I'm looking the next. And if God's not inviting me into something special, then there's things that he wants me to be a part of that I'm already a part of. How I love my wife, how I love my own children, how I love people around me. That's already the space in which he makes himself known. And if there's a kind of way to invite others into that, then let it happen. I think it was a lot easier for us, especially when we had kids around in our home, we had kids around the house. And it was easier to have those kinds of conversations. Now, man, unless we find a way to connect, I'm gonna go with Lewis to some of his gang stuff. I want to get to know some of these kids and hang out with them. Now, it's going to be a challenge because I'm a white guy hanging out with them. So I might be a narc or something. But I even had a connection in the police department. I went and told them, there's somebody I know from this work I did on this Thousand Oaks thing with the mass murder in our neighborhood. I got to know one of the police captains, and he's invited me to have some time with him. So I have followed up on that. And I told him, I said, this is going on. And this is one of those things. It's not official. There's no ministry behind it, though Sarah and I, and we've got some other people who are supporting them, starting to support to free Lewis's time. I want him accessible to kids in this area because he's turning kids around academically. He's turning kids around in terms of their not being out committing crimes. He's helping change guys' lives because they're finding acceptance beyond the gang and somebody who loves Jesus and follows him. And they're engaged in that conversation, though they haven't all decided yet. And I think that inures to the benefit of the community. So I was telling the police captain, I think your police ought to, you know, come by and see the kids, be a face among them, help find them they need a space right now in which they can do some training and just, you know, find a warehouse, just an open room somewhere where these kids could go, or community center, something, and put some city resources behind it, because I think this is going to be to the good of our city. It's not just Luis's thing. It's, man, it's transforming some kids.
Afterwards, we're going to have to talk a little bit later because I actually have a good friend of mine that is a PD officer in Gangland Metro PD in Los Angeles. That's my age, has been an MMA fighter for 20 years.
Oh, wow.
And has a very similar passion to what you just described and is an African American and would love, would love to come be a part of something like that.
I would love to connect with him. That'd be awesome. Yeah. And I hope this sparks some passion in people. Just pray. And it doesn't have to be young people, man. God can put on a passion to be with older folks in their twilight years, or what is God calling your heart to? Yeah. And then I'm going to go start a ministry and raise funds and who's the next person in my life that I could just begin to befriend and open the door to? And that door may open other doors, and just follow God on an adventure rather than I'm going to scope me out a ministry and put all the objectives together in the 5-year plan. Don't do that. Yeah. Just follow him. Follow the adventure of following Jesus and see where he leads you in 2020.
And I mean, honestly, like even just, and I'm going to say it, even though I'm a publisher, don't start a book club unless
you want to do it for a polarized nation thing. If you want to do it for that book, great. Yes,
exactly. Unless you're reading Language of Healing for a Polarized Nation, don't start a book club. Like, unless they're intentionally seeking you out and asking you to do that.
Well, if you want older people, book club might be a good thing.
Yes, exactly.
If you're wanting young people, you got to do that.
If you're one in the teens or the early college, don't start there. Maybe later once the relationships are built, but don't go there first.
I hear you.
All right. Well, thank you so much. This has been great.
Yeah. Merry Christmas to you. We'll see you in the new year.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.